WCITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
And good afternoon and welcome back to Community Living Radio. I decided to go without the theme music today. Maybe mostly because I kind of spaced the idea I was supposed to play the theme music, but that's okay. We have a very exciting person with us today. Rosemarie Barnes is an international speaker, international best-selling author, executive presentation training trainer, leading others to speak, to engage, speak to succeed. Wow. She holds a degree in education, music, drama. I love drama. And a number of other Canadian universities, and is certified as a professional speaking coach. Sometimes I need that. Through her company, Confidence Stages, she offers keynote addresses and breakout sessions, bridging generation gaps. That's right. For all you who are millennials, you need to talk to this lady because she can actually help you a lot gaining confidence and speaking. So with that, I'm not going to go through. There's another long list of accolades that Rosemarie has because she's so well accomplished. Welcome to the show, Rosemarie.
It's so nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, trust me, the pleasure's all mine. Ever since I saw you on stage a few weeks ago.
It was such a delight to give that presentation. Yeah. It was when people want to learn, when people want to succeed, they are the perfect ears.
Yes.
What a delight it was to speak with that group of people.
Yes, it was just a pleasure to have you, and I was glad I was able to be in the audience, and I was also glad that I was able to turn my camera towards you too. So we'll see how that actually came out, right? So what brought you to create Confidence Stages, and to actually become the speaker you are?
Well, that's a long story. How much time do you have?
Goodness. We have
an hour. I have an hour. An hour. All right. The history in an hour. The short and the long of it is that my husband and I moved to Vancouver Island from Alberta just about 5 years ago. Blissfully unaware that employment on Vancouver Island is a little bit difficult to find, especially when you don't know a single person. We moved just prior to moving here. I was teaching theater. I taught at a monster large high school at this part of the career, 2,500 students in grade 10, 11, and 12. Mm-hmm. That's a big school. And I taught drama, and I taught musical theater, and I taught choir and that sort of thing. So I'm the artsy fartsy person that you've heard so much about. We moved to Vancouver Island, and I was just going to slide into a school, and I was going to work a few more years, and it was going to be lovely. But we moved just in time for the teacher's strike.
Oh.
And yes, it was dismal, and teachers were being laid off and all kinds of things. So I thought, well, this isn't going to do at all. So never being one to just lay down and take the fates, I decided I would start a company because why not? I had a company before, a writing company that I ran out of my home in Alberta when the children were young, and I was, you know, making money on the side, as it were. And it was such fun. It was grand. So I decided that since most of my work in teaching music and the arts and whatnot involved me actually teaching confidence to people, if I'm going to ask you in theater to quack like a duck, you have to know that it's safe and you have to be confident enough in your abilities to go ahead and quack like a duck and know that it'll be perfectly fine and, in fact, a little bit fun. So I started Confident Stages with the idea of teaching confidence. I thought it was brilliant.
That's an important topic.
Well, that's what I thought. What can't you do if you don't have the confidence? That said, the really big problem with that wonderful theory was that people who lack confidence don't rush out and sign up for confidence classes. They don't have enough confidence to go sign up for confidence classes. So that wasn't working very well. So, all right, think. And it came to my attention that the biggest fear people have is either death or public speaking. If I could therefore make people confident about public speaking, then what could they not be more confident about? Now, if you need confidence in the death realm, then you need a different kind of person than I am. I can't help you with that one. But if you want to learn how to be confident in your as a person, as a professional, as a business, the number one thing that you can do for yourself is learn how to speak properly in public. So that opened up a whole great big door for me. Now, I've been speaking in public since I was knee high to a grasshopper. I was living on stage. Either I was singing or I was dancing or I was teaching or I was conducting or I was singing or whatever it was I was doing. I seem to have spent an awful lot of time on a stage where other people fear it. It's my happy place.
Yeah. What was the first time you were on stage?
Oh, I was the ripe old age of 5. And I was, yes, I was.
That falls under the A2 Brute? Yeah,
A2 Brute. I actually was dancing. I was an awfully good little ballet dancer. So it was television and it was on stage way back 100,000 years ago when I was that age. I even got to dance for the mayor of the city. And he gave me a beautiful pin and the whole thing. At any rate, that started a love affair with being on stage. It was very difficult for me to understand then why the terror of people making themselves vulnerable in front of other people. So it became important for me to understand why people are so frightened. What is it about being on stage terrifying me so badly that they would rather honestly be it, as Jerry Seinfeld says, in the casket than having to give a eulogy if you have to go to a funeral?
They'd rather be the one in the casket. That is
absolutely
very true.
Absolutely. Having to speak in public is terrible. So what I did was I used my teaching background, my business background, and put the two together and created Confident Stages, which is a place for executives and business people of all kinds to learn how to give presentations that get the yes. This is my little mantra. A good idea not shared well is a terrible shame. A brilliant idea not shared well is a tragedy.
Yes.
If I can help the world share our individual brilliance to be shared worldwide and all of us be better for it, why would I not? And since I have the expertise and the passion and the deep, deep respect for language, it just seemed a natural fit. And so Confident Stages developed in that direction. So now I give keynote speeches all over the place and I write best-selling books and they're fantastic and aren't I all that in a bag of chips. And what I do is I help people, I champion leaders, no matter of age. If they're a leader, they have to know how to speak. So that's what I talk about.
Well, that's very, very true. And having been in the audience for that last talk, it was kind of funny that the one thing that people walked away with was you you did it in such a joking manner that it stuck in her head about the butt squeeze.
Oh, well, yes, the making diamonds. Clench your cheeks, not the ones on your face. The reason for that is multiple. Here's the thing, is that speaking, like singing, is a full body experience. Your vocal cords don't do anything but flap in the breeze. There's no power to be gained by trying to force more air through. All that does is damage your speaking mechanism. So people for years have believed that you have to tighten the diaphragm so you can project to the back row and be all kinds of important. In fact, that's so counter to appropriate vocal production.
Right.
See, that's my little special slice of the pie in this coaching world, in this training world, is yes, I teach you content and I teach you presentation skills and I teach you delivery skills, but the special sauce is how to use your voice. It is, after all, that which is carrying your message. Is it not rather important then to know how to use it properly? So I also teach elocution. I teach all manner of ways to make sure that your words are so important. But here's the thing about it, is that your words will not and cannot be heard if they aren't coming from the core. We've heard all this talk about the core, you know, the core needs to be involved, strengthen your core, right. Pilates, all that core stuff. Well, in order to speak well, in order to be taken seriously, you must engage your core when you're speaking. People do that and they become rigid like a 2x4. They've got their core engaged. Now they're so tense that nothing can come out anyway. And it's counteractive, counterintuitive. So by tightening your cheeks, not the ones on your face. And I mean tight. You've got a little lump of coal back there and you're going to turn that puppy into a diamond. You're squeezing. Your core is now engaged. Your diaphragm is firm. It's connected without being rigid. Mm-hmm. And your whole body is engaged in the process. Now you've got power. Now the weight of your words will be heard. Now you can be funny. Now you can be sad. Now you can be hysterical. Now you can be deeply passionate. And it will all come out differently because you've got the support of your core.
Yeah. You sound like a good play.
I sound like what?
A good play.
Oh, absolutely.
Your voice, the way you use your voice, you sound like a good play.
Thank you.
It's like, when did you feel engaged in and...
Well, and I thank you for that because I am a voice actor as well.
Yeah.
When you know how to use your voice, whether it's for classical singing, whether it's for singing jazz, whether it's for singing rock, whether it's for speaking,
yeah,
it's all one and the same. So people that have studied music already have access to the voice, even if they've never learned to sing, even if they play a wind instrument. You need the core engagement to blow a French horn and a trumpet and a flute.
Yes.
I used to teach people to do that. So in so doing, not only does your voice resonate and you get the power of your body, it also is step number the very first to controlling nerves.
Right.
People are so frightened and their knees tremble and their hands shake and their voices do funny things when they're on the stage and all kinds of things. They get too much spittle or not enough. And it's all because of adrenaline.
Right. I do have, because some people, they hear me and they're like, you and ah a lot. I'm like, yeah, but I actually have control over the um and ahs. I know when I'm going to do it and when I'm not going to do it. With that being said, I was actually in another room with this lady, and she was trying to tell her story about growing up as an Aboriginal woman, and you're talking about the adrenaline and things like that, and she couldn't get the words to come together. It was like, and then a word, and then a word. And it's like, Is that what happens to the brain? The brain just freezes because the adrenaline and all those cortisol stress hormones get involved in the brain?
What happens is that adrenaline is released anytime we fear that we are in danger. Mm-hmm. And our brain doesn't know the difference between what is actually true and what we believe to be true. Mm. If going up on stage is terrifying, it is exactly the same chemical reaction as looking down the forest path and seeing a lion or a tiger about to pounce. It's the same adrenaline. What adrenaline does is it automatically changes the way you breathe. So instead of the low, slow breaths of belly breathing, which we know are calming, everybody's doing yoga, everybody's doing meditation, and if you're not, you don't have to. It's the low, slow breath that puts you to sleep. It's that calming breath. As soon as adrenaline is released, we change from that to chest breathing, similar to a panic-stricken person or a German Shepherd on a hot day, or a woman in labor. That kind of breathing causes more adrenaline to be released, which causes more of that kind of breathing. Now, the problem with that breathing is that it is preparing your body for fight and flight. It is transferring as much oxygen away from the higher functions of the brain and into the muscles so that you can lift the burning car off the baby. There's a reason that these heroes don't remember doing it. It's because the higher functions of the brain are temporarily dampened in order to get the energy into the muscles. In effect, it can make us sometimes dumb as a doorknob. And so in order to counteract that effect of losing your place, not remembering what you're supposed to do, you have practiced, you have rehearsed, you have done all these things, and you get up on stage, the adrenaline hits, and all of a sudden you can't even remember your own name. As soon as you tighten your cheeks, not the ones on your face, it tells the adrenaline to back off. I got this. The stance, the tightening of the core, calms the flow of adrenaline, brings your breathing back to normal, and sends it all back up to your head where you need it to be if you're up on the stage speaking.
Well, yeah.
controlling your air is one of the very most important things about being a public speaker. And the very easiest way to do that is to engage your core. And the best way to do that nobody can see, is to tighten the cheeks behind you. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to do that forever, that you have to walk around with a lump of coal back there. It, within a very short amount of time, maybe one, maybe two presentations, you quickly learn, your body learns that it likes it. Mm-hmm. And it becomes automatic. Every time you open your mouth to speak in public, your core will automatically engage for you, so you don't have to think about it again.
That is, I have to say that that's probably very true, mm-hmm. because, okay, so there are some interesting bits about this. Because I started on stage at 5, and don't ask me to, after the performance, could not remember a thing that I did on that stage. All I knew is I got applause.
There you go.
That's all I knew, and that's all I needed to know, right?
That's right.
And by the time I wound up being a minor rock star, it's like, oh, there's 10,000 people out there. And it's like, I can't tell you what I did on stage to actually earn mm-hmm. the applause, but it just happened. So
you bet.
is that, again, all the dopamine and all the, like, oh, I feel good hormones saying, you don't need to remember this. Just go.
Dopamine is so powerful. And it's one of the reasons that we are addicted to our telephones. every time we hear a little ding saying we've got a text or an email message, the little dopamine squirt that, oh, somebody wants me, keeps us fueled for a very long time.
Mm.
That's why we cart our phones around with us everywhere we go, because we like getting the shot in the arm, as it were, that little dopamine blast.
There it is.
One of the things that we do have to be very careful of in this part of the world is that we are suffering so badly from lazy mouth. We do not pronounce our words properly.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, and that's fine when we're talking to our friends, when we're talking to our neighbors, but when you are representing a company, when you are representing yourself professionally, there are some things that are better said in their more eloquent fashion, as it were.
So let me cut you off there for a second, and we'll get back to a few examples after I play a couple of ads here. Okay. I absolutely love it when this thing actually does what I tell it to do. Okay, we'll be back.
Place at Creekside Community Recreation Center at 12 p.m. To learn more about how you can join us and create a movement, visit www.walkforalzheimers.ca. Vancouver, together, we make memories matter. CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts on Main Street at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Biltmore Cabaret, Red Cat Records, Lucky Comics, The Wallflower Modern Diner, Neptune Records, The Rag Machine, The Regional Assembly of Text, and so many more.
Okay, and we're back with Rosemary, and we're going to get on with those examples of why we want to make sure that we control our breath, control our head, and everything else that goes along with public speaking.
Okay, I admit it. I'm a grammar Nazi, self-proclaimed, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for the power of language. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words are far more powerful. Unfortunately, our whole society is becoming more casual. And that, of course, means that our language becomes more casual. Language is not static. It grows, it changes, it evolves. For example, did you know that you can find the word diss in the dictionary now? Meaning an insult or a slur, if you diss someone. The language changes, and that's wonderful, that's great. When you're representing yourself as a professional, the words that you choose are important, but equally important is how you pronounce them. Did you know I actually saw in a newspaper the other day, instead of the contraction could have coming out as could have, it is now being represented, even in professional writing, as could of, O-V, instead of could have, because we're speaking so poorly that we begin to accept it as being true. So could have, would have, should have are all being written with an O-F instead of the H-A-V-E that it's short for. It's puzzling to me. It's reasonable because you're looking at me funny, like you don't get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. I'm thinking about how Webster's in Oxford actually is supposed to evolve.
Yeah, well, evolve, and there are new words. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, that when we pronounce our words in a slightly less articulate way, whoopsie. There we go. When we pronounce our words in a less articulate way, the observer begins to deduct points from our IQ.
Yes.
The more we say gonna, woulda, shoulda, the more we say we leave off the ing and go thinking instead of thinking, the more we say ta instead of to, the more the receiver of those words sees you as inarticulate, ineloquent, less than professional. If you want a very easy way of suddenly seeming more educated, more intelligent, and more in control, simply make the effort to pronounce your words correctly. And you will be seen as an expert, whether you are or whether you are not, simply by the way you pronounce words.
You're reminding me of, because I went to Catholic school, you're reminding me of a second grade nun.
Yes, well, I'm not sure that's quite what I wanted to do, but I do hear you.
Yeah, because she stood in the front of the room and she said, enunciation is key.
And there you go. It's interesting that you can get away with sloppy talk. Mm-hmm. In inarticulate language, when you're sitting around, having a beer around the fire pit, when you're at a picnic, when you're at the beach. But as soon as you are in an office and you are portraying yourself as professional, just the way you pronounce words makes the battle so much easier. People already assume you know what you're talking about when you speak properly.
That is so very true.
The word that is ailing us the most lately is the word like.
Oh, like.
So like
I use that word all the time.
So like I was like at the mall and I found these like to die for shoes. So like I got on your phone and I called you. And so like, I'm going to take a picture and just shoot it off to you there. Can you see it? Can you see it? So like, which one should I get? How many times have I said the word like? Like is the same thing as so well. It's a split second to harness our thoughts and get them to fly in formation.
Right.
Instead of putting the word like in, just stop talking. Mm-hmm. Let the word come instead of filling it in with the space fillers. When you're speaking in public, one of the most important things to realize is that the words are the least important part of your message. Did I say that? Yes, I did. When you are a public speaker, the words are the least important part of your message.
So what is the most important part of our message?
Aligning all the messages. Thank you for that lovely segue. If you're that was well done. Well done. If your words do not match your facial expressions, your body position, your gestures, if there's a conflict, the words are not what's believed. It's always the body language that is believed over top of the words if there's a contradiction. Data, stats, all that kind of thing. So put great big ish marks around everything. 7% ish of the message that you are sending is through your words. The other 93% of your message ish comes from physiological means. Where you're moving, how you're moving, what you're gesturing, what your voice sounds like, how you're standing, that's sending the message. And as I say, if there's a conflict, it's not the words. And yet here's what happens. Speakers or anyone having to give a public anything, even an introduction for someone, worries about the words. Every word must be perfect. and we write it and we slave over it and we marry our brilliant turns of phrase. And then we get up on stage and we are terrified that we're going to forget those perfect words. And so the adrenaline gets triggered and all that other stuff happens. When we're nervous, we stand differently than when we don't. When we're nervous, we gesture differently. All of these, and this is my biggest pet peeve, and then I'll get off this soapbox. Speakers that wander around like a caged animal. It's a dissipation of nerves, but it's become so common to see a speaker wandering around the front of their presentation space that we begin to think that's what you're supposed to do. And it has become normalized. And all that does is dissipate your message. It makes it weaker. The old saying, stand and deliver. When you are making your strongest point, stay still. Mm-hmm. Stand strong, not in general fashion with your shoulders back and your nose in the air, but stand in a strong position and speak the words. Then when you're telling a story, if you want to move a little bit, that's fine. But for heaven's sake, if you have nowhere to go, why are you burning gas at these prices?
That is very true. Now, you demonstrated I loved how you did this dance, and you looked like the samurai warrior who was about to take his enemy down with confidence and say, "Yes, this is my victory." But anyway, when you stood to make a point, you actually had your feet shoulder width, mm-hmm. and they were straight, your toes straight forward. Mm-hmm. And you were in a stance that said, yes, that is my point. Listen to it.
Exactly. How to find that? You see, when you tell people to stand with your feet shoulder width apart, they generally go into the sumo warrior stance with their feet wide enough apart that a great big pig could run right through. That happened to me, by the way.
The sumo warrior is the wrong warrior. The samurai is the right one, because he's the one that's actually harder to push over.
Okay, so there you go. to get your feet in the right position so that your body is not sending any particular message and therefore is not contradicting you, mm-hmm. put your feet together, bunions and heels together.
Okay.
Now splay the toes apart. Leave your heels together and open up your toe like Mary Poppins or ballet first position. And now just swing your heels behind swing them apart so that your heels are right behind your toes. Now your feet are shoulder width apart.
Right.
It's not the Grand Canyon between your feet. It's just this little thing to make you look neutral.
Yes.
And to make you look like you can't be blown over in a stiff wind, but neither are you aggressive.
Right.
All of this is to say that what needs to be topmost on the mind of a public speaker is not themselves. The public speaker is only there to be of value to their listener. They are not up there to do self-therapy while they speak of the torments and the trials and tribulations they've been through in order to get to where they are. The audience doesn't care unless the speaker can then turn it around and illustrate what that has to do with them.
Right.
The speaker's only purpose is to solve the top of mind problem that the audience came in with.
Right. So you also teach people to take their most messed up moment in life and turn it into see that problem? I can fix it for you.
The only reason to be telling people about the trials and torments of your life is to make it easier for them to get through a similar situation. Mm-hmm. What most speakers do is they fall short of turning it around and telling the audience what good it is for them. A good speaker gets up, speaks eloquently, makes his point very clearly, and states his case. But an excellent speaker turns around and then interprets that for how the audience can use it for themselves.
There you go.
Big difference. Big difference. The speaker is not there for themselves. The speaker's purpose is to help their audience.
And you did that pretty well earlier in this conversation, in the first segment, when you told how, when you got to Victoria, it was Victoria, right?
Yes.
Yeah. See, sometimes the memory fails.
Yeah.
Not in this case. It could. How you expected to slide into the school and you realize that, oh, people are being laid off and there's a teacher strike, and you turned it into, I'll build my own classroom, and this is how I did it.
Mm-hmm. I am a teacher. Mm-hmm. You know how sometimes there are things that you do that may not be necessarily what you are? My husband is an engineer. It's not what he does. It's what he is. Mm-hmm. I'm a teacher now for a while, and I still have I keep my teaching certificate up to date because I like to work with the different generations. And by keeping my teaching certificate up to date, it's easy for me to go into the schools to observe what our youngest generations believe, what their values are. It's very encouraging to me to see what our youngest are growing up to be. They are going to change the way this world does business. It's very exciting. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
So, but besides that, even though I'm not always in a classroom, I'm always a teacher. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting when our calling finds us and we simply turn it around to whichever way we need to make it work. Now, there's a difference, too, between being a coach and being a trainer. And I don't call myself a coach.
You specifically told me to say you were a trainer. So
I'm a trainer.
So what's the difference?
I train people with how to organize their content, what to include, what not to include, how to deliver it, how to present it, how to take the final bow, everything from the idea to the final presentation and receiving the yes. I train people to do that for their situation and with their voice and turn them into speakers. What I don't do is coach them through their life issues. I don't coach them through handling their tragedy. I don't coach them through what I do is very much, these are learnable skills, mm-hmm. every one of them, and I'm going to train you how to do them. I'll even show you all kinds of ways that you can interpret it, but that part is up to you.
Right.
That part is up to you, not me.
Right.
There's a difference between being a business presentation trainer and someone's coach.
Right. I totally get that point because, one of the people I work with, she is a coach, mm-hmm. and she's like, well, you have to do this, this, and this, as she's trying to coach me. And she's like, you want them, and she tries to get me to kind of mimic the coaching thing, mm-hmm. as a trainer. Like, no, I'm not coaching them. I will show them that this is the path. I will show them how to use the path. I will show them how to use the mic for broadcasting, how to stand in front of the camera so that they look good on television. But I'm not going to coach them through the minutia, as I like to put it.
That's exactly the reason that I call myself a trainer rather than a coach is that I'm not trying to make anybody in my own image.
Right.
I do not have what works for me will not work for you. So training of the processes and the mind and how you think about this whole thing is very different being coached and being trained. I'm putting most of the responsibility on the people that I train.
Mm-hmm.
To be a coach means that it means that there's an emotional attachment between a coach and a client. There is one for a trainer as well, but it's entirely different. One is a more professional situation versus a more personal situation.
Yeah.
Not that I don't help people get through their personal walls and their personal barriers to their success. I do, but we strip away the emotion of it, so that then you know how. Because here's what speakers have to do: speakers have to speak directly into the hearts of the people that they're listening to.
Right.
We make our decisions with our hearts and our guts. And then, mm-hmm. because, you know, you've got that gut feeling, or I feel it in my heart, and, depending on whether you're talking to a left brain or a right brain person. And then our brain justifies it for us. But
very
the decision
true.
Is already made. So when you're speaking to people, you have to touch them in their emotional center first. Then let them justify how it works for them. That's the difference between a trainer and a coach.
Yeah. Okay. Hang on one second, and let me try again to get these ads right. Okay. Hang on a second. We'll be right back. You're listening to Community Living Radio here on CITR, UBC Radio 101.9 FM.
Sixth, participate and fundraise in the Vancouver Investors Group Walk for Alzheimer's. It's a fun and family-friendly event that sends a message of inclusion and hope to the estimated 70,000 British Columbians living with dementia and the people who care for them. The Vancouver Walk will take place at Creekside Community Recreation Center at 12 p.m. To learn more about how you can join us and create a movement, visit www.walkforalzheimers.ca. Vancouver, together, we make memories matter. CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts on Main Street at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Biltmore Cabaret, Red Cat Records, Lucky Comics, The Wallflower Modern Diner, Neptune Records, The Rag Machine, The Regional Assembly of Text, and so many more.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
And we're back here on Community Living Radio, here on CITR, UBC Radio, 101.9 FM. And we're here talking with Rosemarie Barnes, and this is our final segment. And where were we?
Well, what we were talking about was the difference between a trainer and a coach.
Yeah.
What I'd like to segue that into is what we are needing now in the business world. Whether because the work expectations have changed. And so what I'm finding is that because of the work that I do with presentation skills, I'm finding more and more as I go into businesses to work with creating presentations that get the deal done, that I'm finding a huge, huge gap between the generations in the business world. We're finding the values of people have changed. The work expectations have changed. We used to live in a world of the triangular, the pyramidal hierarchical structure in business, with the leader sitting on high at the very pinnacle at the top of the pyramid, and the pyramid getting wider and wider and wider down to the base, where we've got all the worker bees, the peons working at the wide part, and the orders coming down from on high. Well, that method of organization in businesses is going away after having been the stalwart for a very long time. But now our young people who have had input into every family decision made in their homes and being expected to contribute in every way, shape, and form, school, now they're going into the workplaces and they're expecting that same treatment. They're expecting to be consulted. They're expecting to be involved in the processes. And so the pyramid style isn't working for them. They're looking for a table rather than the pharaoh sitting at on top of his pyramid. Right. And so the generation gaps are getting very large. We're getting Grand Canyons in there because neither set of thought parameters are understanding why the other guy is behaving the way they do.
Yes.
Where Generation X and the baby boomers really, really, really wanted, desired, and needed structure, it made them safe. We wanted to do our little piece of the whole business thing brilliantly well. And we really didn't care what went on behind all the other doors. We wanted to do our part. We wanted to do it excellently well. And then we wanted to go home and live our life there. Work was a means to be able to live well in the evenings and weekends. Right. And the two combined was only at the upper echelons did you agree to work weekends and evenings and all that sort of thing. But for the regular worker bees, it was go in, do your job, do it well, go home and enjoy life there. We didn't expect enjoyment from work. We went in, we worked, we got our dollars, we went home, and we stuck with jobs we didn't really enjoy or that didn't fulfill us because we wanted the security. We wanted to know the pension check was covered. We wanted the benefits. Well, that's not really the way the world is working anymore. Mm-hmm. Now, our younger people want their work to be part of their life. Our younger people have been raised to know that they are special, that they're destined for greatness, that they can do anything they put their minds to. And so they can.
Right.
But they go into the work world where the older generation still expects them to start in the mailroom and claw their way up the ladders like they did. Well, the problem is mail rooms don't even exist anymore. And our young people are so much superior with technology and the latest in all the gadgets. And technology has caused such rapid change that unless you were born and bred into it, you can't keep up. So the business of, because our younger people have been connected to the whole world since the day they came out the hatch, they will not accept, you don't need to know this. This is a need to know basis and you don't need to know. They're not going to accept that.
No.
Not even for a second, where other generations did. I don't know who has the harder job. I really don't. The structure-oriented older generations who tell you what to do, when to do it. Those were the years of the procedures manual.
Right.
Any problem, just look it up in the book. There it is. Do it that way. Well, would you rather be a young person with the work together, teamwork, whatever happens, let's brainstorm, let's make this fluid, let's make this alive. Would you rather be one of those individuals trying to get an older person to come into this free-flowing circle as a boss? Or would you rather be the structure person trying to get the free-flowing younger one to fly information, stay straight, go by the book? I don't know who has the harder job.
That is a very interesting question to answer, because I know in my own business, it's a very loose structure, mm-hmm. and everybody's a contributor.
Right.
And how else am I supposed to, well, my business is also kind of an art business too. Broadcasting entertainment is art. So,
right.
So, I mean, but I can see some other, when I was in engineering, that may not have been, that may have really annoyed a lot of the senior engineers.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And so because the values have changed, where we used to value independence so severely, mm-hmm. now, no, we value teamwork with that same amount of fervor.
Right.
It's we no longer are searching for independent autonomy. I am me, I am a mountain, I am on my own, I can do it all by myself. Now, can you imagine our younger people having that attitude? No. They know the value of teamwork. To be fair, though, teamwork and a democracy in running a business is hugely time intensive. It is much more efficient to say, do it this way, do it right, or leave. Now, it takes so much more time to have input from all the parties and coming to consensus and all that kind of thing. You can see why there's such a great divide, where one is placing extraordinary value on efficiency.
Right.
The other is placing extraordinary value on relationships.
Hmm.
So how do you talk to each other when the values are different and when the work expectation is so completely different? Used to be, once was, you didn't go to work expecting anything except to put in your time and go home.
Right.
Now people go to work and they want to be fulfilled and they want to be happy and they want to be challenged and they want to be, because it's their life. They want it to be, they don't want work-life balance. They want it to share equal parts of importance, and one is the same and one leads to the other. That's just not how it used to be. And so there's nothing wrong with change. Change is the only thing you can count on. Everything is going to change. It's your mindset around it.
Right.
When you are therefore in the world of business and having to give presentations and speak, you always must speak one step. I don't know how to say this without using the climb the ladder analogy. You have to speak one step better than the people you're speaking to. Not seven, not 3 miles, but you have to know who you're speaking to.
Right.
And this is one of the things that our millennials and Generation Zs, the younger, don't quite have it figured yet. They don't understand that you can't speak to all the same people the same way. That you can't speak to a group of frightened children the same way as you speak to senior partners at a huge law firm. This is where we're having a bit of the issue.
Yeah.
The parties aren't understanding how to bridge it, how to make that gap go away. So that's why I wrote my second book, is called Confident Leadership in 21st Century Business, bridging the generation gaps. If you understand why people believe what they believe, you can find common ground.
Okay. So we got 5 minutes left.
Okay.
So I love my two-part question for this part. Okay.
All right.
So part one is, how do people get a hold of you to work with you? Mm-hmm. And the second part is, what is that one golden nugget that you would give somebody of advice?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. To get a hold of me, it's very easy. www.confidentstages.com is my website. My email is rbarnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, at confidentstages.com. There you go. Please get in touch with me. I always answer emails because it would be rude not to. There are so many ways to make a difference in this world. My way is through speaking. It's very powerful. Please learn to speak well so that you don't have to fight a battle that doesn't need to be fought. If you want to consistently get the big yes, learn how to present your information, your ideas, your facts, your brilliance. Learn how to speak. Presentations are not standing up in front of an audience and reading from a script. You're not a trained actor. Actors take their lives long to learn how to take the written word, even if they wrote it themselves, and turn it into something brilliant for the ears of their listeners. A presentation is everything from an elevator pitch to a boardroom, to one-on-one employee reviews, to giving a presentation in front of 5,000 people and everything in between. If you are speaking about your business, even if it's just one word, you are making a presentation. And you can do it well and get the yes, or you can shoot yourself in the foot. We spend money hand over fist, hours of time, effort like crazy to create our brand for our businesses. Mm-hmm. And then we open our mouths and often eviscerate it. Learn to present yourself at least as well as your brand does when you're not there.
Yeah. So with that being said, thank you for joining us. And everybody out there, since our audience is mostly people with disabilities, and you can turn your life around with public speaking, and you can use your story to actually get people to turn their lives around and do amazing things. So contact Rosemary Barnes at confidentstages.com. Get to your computer right now and just start typing in. Get a hold of her, and she's fantastic, and you'll love working with her. So thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah. It's always amazing conversation with you. So.
Love it. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Thank you. And okay. Thank you, everybody out there for joining and listening in. And that's all for today. We'll see you next week. Bye.
waiting. The sun goes sweeping across the Southland.